Bletchley was a small, seemingly inconsequential railway town about 50 miles northwest of London. However, since 1938, the town was also the home of what was officially known as the Government Code and Cipher School. But those in the know referred to it as Station X, or War Station, or just the initials BP for Bletchley Park. The Bletchley Estate, the former manse of Sir Herbert and Lady Fanny Leon, was a red brick Victorian monstrosity in a faux Tudor style. Now, under government control, it bustled with men and women in uniform, as well as civilians. Mostly men in baggy wrinkled trousers and herringbone tweed jackets with leather elbow patches. The house's formerly lush lawns were flattened and worn from all the foot and bicycle traffic. The gardens had been trampled to make room for hastily assembled huts and office buildings. Although it was a secret to most who worked there, the real business of Bletchley was breaking Nazi military code. The cryptographers at Bletchley Park had a reconstructed Enigma machine used by the Germans, a gift from the Poles, a code key used in the Norway campaign, and two keys used by the Nazi Air Force. Though they received a huge volume of decrypts, they still couldn't be used for practical purposes. Under the leadership of Alan Turing, Peter Twin and John Jeffries, they were still waiting and working, hoping for a miracle. The Nazis thought their codes were unbreakable, and they had good reason to believe so. When a German commander typed in a message, the machine sent electrical impulses through a series of rotating wheels, contacts, and wires to produce the enciphered letters, which lit up on a panel above the keyboard. By typing the resulting code into his own machine, the recipient saw the deciphered message light up, letter by letter. The rotors and wires of the machine could be configured in an almost infinite number of ways. The odds against anyone breaking Enigma were a staggering 150 million, million, million to one. Benjamin Beatty, a graduate of Trinity College at Cambridge with a PhD in logical mathematics, worked in Hut 8, trying to break Nazi naval decrypts. Beatty had been toiling away for 8 months in the drafty hut. It stank of damp, lime and coal tar. His office was one room of a dozen, divided by flimsy partitions made of plywood. The noise from the other workstations drifted about. Low conversations, thudding footsteps, a shrill telephone ring. The steady clicks of the Type X machines in the decoding room. The harsh, fluorescent overhead light cast long shadows across the concrete floor as Beatty and his office mate, both youngish men in rumpled corduroy trousers and heavy wool sweaters, worked at mismatched, battered wooden desks piled with sheaves of papers. Thick manila folders with "Top Secret" stamped in heavy red ink across them were heaped haphazardly on the floor. Dirty tea mugs were lined up on the window's ledge, and steam hissed from the paint-chipped radiator. Blackout curtains hid the view. Usually a prodigious worker, Beatty couldn't wait to leave. He had a date.
"So, is she an imaginary girl, or a real one?" asked James Abbott, his office mate.
Abbott was young, but his face was pale and drawn, and he had dark purple shadows under his eyes. They all looked like that at Bletchley. Sleep was considered an unnecessary extravagance. Beatty was not amused.
"I don't kiss and tell, old thing," he said, shrugging into a wool coat and wrapping a striped school scarf around his neck. "I say," said Abbott, putting his worn capped toe Oxfords up on the desk and leaning back. "At least comb your hair, or what's left of it."
It was true. Beatty might have been only in his late 20s, with a face that still had the plushness of youth, but already his dark hair was receding. It could have been genetics, or the prodigious stress Beatty was under as a boffin, as the cryptographers were called at Bletchley. Generally, he was too sleep-deprived and distracted to give his appearance much thought, but it hadn't gone without noticing that in the confines of BP, the boffins were at the top of the pecking order, as far as the women there were concerned. It was the first time Beatty had been viewed by the fairer sex in such a positive light, and suddenly, he was in demand.
And so, while at first he believed it was absolute insanity that someone like Victoria Keeley, who turned heads at Bletchley with her tall, slim figure, pale skin and dark hair, would be interested in someone like him, he'd slowly grown to accept and even appreciate it. There was a knock at the door. Abbott's eyebrows rose. Beatty cracked the door open, but it was too late. Abbott had already caught sight of who it was. "Victoria Keeley, Queen of the Telly Princesses, what brings you to our humble abode?" Abbott said, leaning back even farther in his desk chair. Victoria had a profile as sharp as Katharine Hepburn's and an aura of offhand glamour that came from being a recent debutante who spoke flawless French and rode and played tennis superbly. "Only a telly countess, Mr. Abbott," she replied, with her best cocktail party smile. "Despite my family's august lineage, I can't quite aspire to royalty."